All right, Gene Taylor is going to join us in hour two of the show at 5:20. Back into football recruiting, though. I understand the disappointment that a lot of people who follow this closely are feeling right now. K-State lost another prospect-ish to Iowa State over the weekend. We talked about Carson Willits last week. Will McLaughlin is the other. A couple of linebackers. And K-State did land a recruit, but it's Colby McAllister. He's somebody that doesn't have any other offers, certainly no major offers, and didn't really appear to have much of a recruiting profile out there before he commits to K-State. All happened very fast, offered 6 days ago, and then commits over the weekend. So I get, you look at that, and it's not anything that will overwhelm you or make you feel better about the situation right now. Get it? Honestly, like, this doesn't move the needle for me. It doesn't, and I understand that this kid could wind up blowing up and being great. That's how recruiting works. Yada, yada. I get it. But that doesn't do anything to me to really feel like they're picking up significant momentum on the recruiting trail right now. I think things are tough. I think times are tough. And I'm going to make two separate points here, along with the point that it's definitely fair to be let down by the fact that on the heels of losing two kids to Iowa State and having been 3.5 months since you've gotten a commitment, when you finally do get one, it's somebody that doesn't have offers and hardly anybody's really heard of. You can be disappointed by that. You can be unfulfilled by that. I get it, because to be honest, like, I'm with you. I am with you. I'll make two separate points here, though, that can stand alone on their own. And I think that's where the nuance is required when we have the recruiting conversation at the moment. One, the staff has still dealt with a lot of unexpected bad breaks that were outside of their control. I do still believe that that is absolutely true. And two, having said that, it is also true that what's happening right now on the recruiting trail is not going to push you above where the program's at right now. And I don't mean 4 wins. I mean, in general, over the last 5 to 6 years, like, what this program has been is a 6 to 8 win program. They're not recruiting at a level right now that's going to push you higher than a 6 to 8 win program. Cold hard facts. Circumstances beyond your control or not, I do think that's a reality right now. So let me start here by going the route that I'm sure a lot of people would have expected me to go here, because I have been pretty lenient with this staff and what they've been trying to accomplish. I will point out to you the two things that have worked against K-State on the recruiting trail. Once the pandemic happened, like, hey, you're trying to recruit off of your first season, you win 8 games. Literally the day after the season ended on New Year's Day, they land Jake Rubley, parlaying the momentum of the season into the best recruit that the program's had in 15 years. Great. Then, boom, a pandemic comes two months later. Well, now you're a school that's in the category of schools that get hurt more than others, because when there's a dead period and you can't bring recruits on campus to visit and find out that, oh, hey, Manhattan actually can be a pretty awesome place if you're a college kid playing football. Like, town loves you, great atmosphere for games. Those are things that you all of a sudden, like, your best card, you can't play. You're in a poker game, and they say, all right, every hand that you get, the best card that you have, it's out. You can't play it. That's tough. Other schools have more deeper decks of cards to be able to play there. So that point to me still holds weight. That still is valuable. And then there's the double whammy. You actually get into a season finally, and you lose your starting quarterback. Like, it looks like that's a season that at least is going to have you competing into November for a spot in the Big 12 championship game. Whether or not that would have come to fruition, I mean, I think we can look at it and say Iowa State is probably going to the Big 12 championship game, but it took away your opportunity to at least have it be an exciting race, to be playing more nationally relevant games. I always talk about the fun quotient of the season, certainly decreases that. That was a huge blow. And it's 2 to 3 wins to me for Skylar Thompson going out. That cost you 2 to 3 wins. Something that's out of your control. That wasn't even like, hey, you know, you were trying to run Colin Klein. You're trying to run Skylar Thompson 25 times a game, and it got hurt that way. It wasn't even that. It was just a debatably cheap shot from Rico Jeffers on one play against Texas Tech, and then all of a sudden you lose your quarterback. And now your season drastically changes. So now you're dealing with, hey, already recruiting at a disadvantage, and now you got no extra juice from the season. Now you're an afterthought, a four-win team. You're losing games 69-31 at the end of the year because everything just falls apart. That's tough, and that's not something that this coaching staff could have controlled. But it is a bottom-line business. And so it can also very, very much be true that whether or not you're dealing with that, whether or not you have those obstacles in front of you, if somebody else is just running the 200 meters and you've got the 200-meter hurdles, it's a tough break. But at the end of the day, like, it's who crosses the finish line first. Iowa State has the juice of their season. They did not lose their starting quarterback for the year. They've been able to parlay that better than K-State has on the trail right now. And nobody's 5 years from now going to be asking questions about, well, what kind of advantage did Iowa State have by the fact that they didn't lose their quarterback and they got to have that dream seat? Like, nobody cares. And recruiting right now has become fairly stagnant. It's not, I would also say, it's not fair to come in and say, well, they're just doing the exact same thing that Snyder did, and now Klieman's not as good of a coach, so how do you expect to... No, let's not get it twisted. They're still recruiting at a higher level than Snyder 2.0 at the end of it because, well, they try, but it's grown stagnant from where they lifted it up. You know, they lifted it up a notch from where it was at under Snyder 2.0, but now it's become very stagnant. And you're going to have to figure out a way to get it done. I think they desperately need this season to actually come and get here, to have something else to sell. June 1st, things will be opening back up on the recruiting front as well. Like, the dead period finally is going to be over. Those two things will very much help. But they're going to have to find a way. Because I will cut them some slack and explain to you how we got here, they're going to have to figure out something more than this if you want the program to evolve beyond where it's at right now. I do think that's also a reality.
I've said many times on this show, I just don't quite go full head first into all the recruiting news because I'm a, hey, make me believe that you're a good recruit. I mean, you could put a couple of stars next to a guy's name, but who says he can't come in and be much better than his, what he's projected to be, or a 3 or 4 star comes in and just doesn't live up to the hype. Everybody's been burned by that many times, so come in and prove it and make me a believer. But if you do want to just kind of go with what has been presented to us and make the comparison with Iowa State, Rivals.com says K-State's 2021 recruiting class is slightly better than Iowa State's. 2022 class, both teams have 4 commitments. Iowa State is right now ranked 37th in the country, K-State's 44th. But this is super early. I mean, there's so much story still to tell. The breaking point is when guys start struggling, some are not bought in, some are not playing well. Who's next? Who's maybe a younger guy that's from that recent recruiting class or the one before that, ready to step up and make an impact, and it feels like you didn't really lose that traction, that you're still being productive?
Well, it's a fair point that you bring up about where the classes are at right now, and this is where I would step in and say, that's why, like, even, you know, you can compare Snyder's last recruiting class was 52nd in 2018, and then 2021, they're 54th. But, like, the 2021 class has Jake Rubley. The 2021 class, there are so many more players there that are 3 stars that actually have other offers, that you're competing with other schools. Like, there's a lot of wiggle room beyond just the rankings when you're talking about Rivals. But you can also say at the end of the day, it's not like a significant numbers increase. If you're a numbers guy, like, okay, you can debate that either way. But I would come back and say also with the Iowa State class, like, it's not this year. You can say it's just 7 spots of a difference, but like the prospects that K-State has in the competition there compared to the prospects that Iowa State has already committed and the competition there, it's pretty night and day. It's pretty night and day. And the other thing that I can understand, and I've defended like this staff, hey, if they don't get the kids from Kansas, as long as you go find a replacement that can play just as much as the kid from Kansas, go do it. But, and it doesn't matter as long as the kid can play. But it is I mean, you're waiting for more. You're like, man, year three, you hoped you would start to be developing the relationships to where you can get more of these Kansas kids and KC area kids. It's not just Kansas. It's the Kansas City Metro. And you're not only losing them, but you're losing out on them to Iowa State. You're losing out on them to the power that's sucking up some of the other resources here that's in a similar spot to you. So I do think, like, it's on my radar, certainly, of concerns. And it's something that I think needs to turn around. There's a lot of time left in this class to do it, as you pointed out, Mitch. There are a lot of factors that have gotten us here that are beyond the coaching staff's control. But they are going to have to figure it out. And right now, it's just not a real fun time. It's not a real fun time to be following K-State football recruiting at the moment. Losses are piling up. Dean Crawford doesn't look good with Jaron Kanick right now from Hayes. You lost Willich. You lost McLaughlin. These are all Kansas and Kansas City area kids that have been lost and been lost in large part to the Iowas and Iowa States of the world. And particularly painful is the Iowa States. I'm just saying I get the frustration right now. And something will need to change if K-State is going to get out of where they're at right now as a program. You need the season to get here. You need a strong year out on the field in 2021. Gene Taylor is going to join us coming up next. Should coaches like Bruce Weber be embracing the transfer portal? We'll ask Gene, see what he says next. Back on the game, John Kurtz, Mitch Fortner, now joined by Gene Taylor, athletics director at K-State. Appreciate the time as always, Gene. K-State baseball wins 2 of 3 this weekend. The last two home series, K-State has taken 2 of 3, including from third-ranked Texas Tech. How fun have the last two series at Toyton Family Stadium been for you to take in?
They've been great. You know, I actually was out of town, unfortunately, for the Texas Tech one, but I was here all weekend. You know, it's just fun to see them play well. You know, the game Friday night was phenomenal. I mean, I think it was just a tremendous pitcher's game, and I hit off with a walk off. You know, where we were inches away from doing that again on, Friday, the first game on the Saturday doubleheader, and then again late Saturday and then yesterday. You know, just it's fun to see the kids playing with some confidence and, you know, feeling good about where they are. And, you know, we need to take advantage of these home series. There's no question.
You guys upped it to 50% capacity as well for the Oklahoma series this weekend. How did things go from an operations standpoint with that?
Well, I think it went fine. Never heard any issues. You know, we didn't really even come close to 50%. Simply the weather wasn't very cooperative for us in terms of that. But I think the fans appreciated it. And, you know, I saw a lot of face masks being worn, which was good, and that's still very, very important for right now. But I'm glad we were able to get a good crowd in there. At least, you know, a little bit more than 25%. I don't know what our actual attendance numbers was. I didn't catch those. But, you know, I think if we get good weather this weekend for West Virginia, I think you'll see those numbers go up.
Gene Taylor is talking with me here on the game. So things right now, I mean, just reading your comments in the Manhattan Mercury and also Ask the AD, I know you've addressed this here recently, but things, fair to say, on track for opening up full attendance for football in the fall?
You know, as like I mentioned to a few people, I was actually on a Zoom call again, you know, we are doing everything we can and, you know, planning to be in a 100% capacity or whatever capacity our fans will want to come to, right? I mean, we're going to continue to sell tickets like we would in any year. I believe we're close to 80% renewal rate right now on season tickets. And, you know, we'll really start hitting heavy the single games later this summer. But, you know, this pandemic, I quit predicting a long time ago. I tried to predict last March. I said, oh, we'll be back in July. And, you know, I was pretty wrong about that. So, you know, I think we just have to move forward like it's going to be, you know, we're going to open the south end zone. We're going to have full capacity and be back operationally like we'd always hope we would be. And if all of a sudden the pandemic comes and bites us in the rear and we have to pivot like we did last year, we will. But we certainly don't hope that's going to be the case, that people will be vaccinated and we're moving forward.
I know big part of that, too, would be tailgating, and tailgating seems to be a go also.
Yeah, tailgating, we're going to go with exit and reentry again like we have in the past. You know, all those things that our fans enjoy. You know, we're probably not going to have stadium-wide alcohol sales because we're going to be doing the exit and reentry. But we are going to, you know, create, with the new south end zone, there might be an opportunity to create a kind of a plaza area that we can control you know, and people can grab a beer inside the stadium, kind of like we do in the Wabash Cannonball area and the North Terrace. But we're still working through some of those things. But, you know, we have decided to go with, you know, exit and reentry next fall.
Gene Taylor is talking with me. I feel like maybe I should know this or be more up to date on this, but where are things at as far as getting student athletes vaccinated right now?
Well, you know, we're not mandating it, and we have provided the opportunities that you know, every student on campus could get. There were some opportunities here at the Lafine Health Center. I don't know the exact number, but our numbers are going up. I think our latest estimate from what our athletic trainers, because not only are they not doing it, can they do it here on campus, but a lot of them are going to, you know, Hy-Vee and the various you know, Dillon's and other drug or pharmacies around the community that are providing vaccinations, and those are a little harder to track. But I think we're a little over 50% right now, and, you know, continues to go up. We're, you know, trying to give them as much information educationally about the vaccines and what they, you know, how they work and the positives and, you know, the few negatives that there are. And, you know, a lot of athletes haven't had major negative reactions, just, you know, similar to what everybody else has had. So continue to educate them, and hopefully they'll all be vaccinated, you know, by the time they get back here in June when they get ready to kick off the summer workout stuff.
Is the anticipation, particularly like from a budget standpoint, do you have to budget out, hey, we're going to be doing as much testing for the next athletic season as we did this past year?
You know, well, those conversations are just beginning right now, and I think it starts with our medical advisors, our doctors here on campus, and our athletic trainers about what the process is, you know, for vaccinated versus non-vaccinated athletes. I would tell you that we are budgeting for testing. Now, whether it's going to be at the level that we tested this past year, I don't know that yet. We're, you know, again, I think a lot of it's going to depend on how many of our athletes are vaccinated. You know, are there new strains? You know, what's the positivity rate out there? And so a lot of that's going to come into play. But we will definitely have dollars in the budget for testing for sure.
Well, switching gears, the other thing it seems like everybody is talking about now in college athletics, the transfer portal, the legislation now looking obviously much more finalized with the NCAA as far as allowing one-time penalty-free transfer. And your basketball program, I mean, I think I would tell you my opinion is, has upgraded and done very well by utilizing the transfer portal this offseason. Where are your feelings at right now in the aftermath of that and what has happened with the basketball program
now? You know, it's like anything else. As we change and go in a new direction in terms of the student-athletes' ability to be more flexible on things, you know, my opinion started one area, and now it's, okay, it's reality, and we just need to learn to live with it. And I think coaches that learn to adapt and utilize it for better in their program. I think things, you know, like a program like Bill Snyder built, where it was a developmental program, where we bring kids in that are under-recruited, we build them into really good players, and we have success. Then you have, you know, a couple of good veteran groups, and then, you know, you kind of rebuild. I think that's going to be harder because those kids, you know, get developed and all of a sudden get pretty good, they're going to start looking for greener pastures. Now, that might settle down as athletes find out that the number of athletes in the portal, how many aren't getting opportunities, and that number is right around 50% right now. I think that will settle down. I think there's kind of a feeling of, oh, boy, that's cool. I'm going to go on the transfer portal and realize that maybe not all of them are going to land where they think they're going to land and be even land a scholarship. And a lot of those numbers are also non-scholarship. But I think coaches are going to learn to adjust and recruit differently. I think I maybe mentioned it to you guys or somewhere where, you know, when I talk to Coach Kleiman, he's got 25 scholarships. He's probably going to hold 15 for high school kids and 10 for the transfer portal and those kinds of decisions. And like you mentioned, Bruce went in and, you know, I think on paper clearly upgraded and it's going to help the program. We've got some veteran players coming in and along with the guys coming back. And so it can be beneficial. I mean, it can hurt you, but it also can be beneficial in a lot of ways, too.
Yeah, no, one thing a lot of people will talk about is a fear, I think in particular if you're a school in K-State's position. If you have somebody that comes in under-recruited, unheralded kid, blows up, plays really well, then, hey, are they going to want to say, I'm going to go to Texas, or I'm going to go to Ohio State. You know what I mean? We've seen like Kansas just pulled in a Division II All-American, kids trying to jump up a level. How much of a fear do you have that that could be something that affects non-blue blood, I guess, quote-unquote, schools out there?
Well, I think it kind of goes both ways, right? I think, yeah, you have that fear, but also maybe there's blue blood programs where kids sitting on the bench that was highly recruited that may not be playing as much, and can you grab one of those that are looking for a place? You know, I think I would have more of a fear if I was at an FBS, or a mid-major in terms of basketball type of program, where coaches work really hard, and that's how they have to develop their program is under recruited kids, and all of a sudden somebody blows up and they have a kid that's really good that leaves and really impacts in a big way. So I think, you know, as a Power Five, I think you can have it go both ways for you, both positive and negative, where if you're a mid-major or a non Power Five school, you might be more impacted negatively by this now. And again, I think it's going to settle down. I really do. I think there's a lot of numbers in there this year, you know, probably be maybe a little bit more. And then I think as kids realize that, okay, I'm not getting the love I thought I was going to get, or I'm not getting that big. There's going to be a few out there that will, absolutely. And my son's Division II program was a really, really good Division II basketball program. And one of their kids just signed with Minnesota. And he was a really good player. Got him to, you know, a couple of regionals. And that, I think that you'll see a little bit of that quite a bit too.
Gene Taylor is talking with me. You know, you brought up, hey, some coaches are going to embrace this and figure out how to play that game, so to speak. Is that, do you have that conversation with your coaches? Like, hey, this is something you may need to work toward embracing, even if you're not fully for where the legislation is going?
Yeah, and I would say most of ours are already there. They've been kind of, the good news is we've been talking about it for a while, that they have been studying it and talking to their colleagues, and you know obviously the transfer portal with the, you know, with the waivers have already been in existence, so they've already seen it kind of an operation. But so I think they've all mentally and even, you know, how they're going to approach it, they've already been working on it. And so I think our coaches are, you know, whether they like it or not, they know it's a reality and they need to figure out how to make it work for them. And I think most of them, at least the ones, conversations that I've had with all of our head coaches, they're like, yeah, we've got a plan in place. And I think you've seen it with Coach Weber. And you know, think about baseball. Baseball's been living in the transfer world, you know, for a long time, with particularly junior college transfers. So it's not totally unusual for them. But, you know, they're still going to now deal with the Division One athletes as well.
One thing that happened, too, the Big 12 got rid of the rule that would force you to still sit out a year if you're transferring within the conference. Is that something that you were on board with, and what were those discussions like?
Well, I was on Jill and I were on the committee, the internal committee that talked a lot about that. And again, you know, a lot of negatives and a lot of positives. You know, for years, we've had a lot of you know, collaboration with coaches, and it's kind of a, okay, you don't really want to go sending your kids to an interconference school, but we felt as long as the NCAA was going to go this route, how as an overall conference with other conferences also getting rid of their interconference transfer rules, could we be even on a legal footing to be able to say, no, you can't do that? It also would become a negative, just a general negative, that where if you're an SEC kid that we're recruiting against an SEC kid, and they go, hey, you come here, you can transfer in your conference if you, not that you recruit that way, but if you go to Big 12, you're going to have to sit out a year. That could become a negative as well. So we just felt, again, it was an uphill battle that, you know, public perception-wise and potentially legally, we weren't going to win if we had the only conference in the country or one of the only Power Five conferences that had that rule in place. And, you know, it's going to get a little dicey because you don't want coaches tampering with other in conference athletes, but that potentially happened. So yeah, it's going to be dicey, but it is a reality again that we're going to have to deal with.
Kind of along those same lines, actually. Speaking of going within conference, I was curious to know what you thought of. I mean, the coaching carousel was pretty crazy in Big 12 basketball. But seeing Chris Beard go from Texas Tech to Texas, if you're an AD, do you sit there and say, like, man, my heart drops because I feel like that could be us. We could be the Texas Tech in this situation. Or how do you react to seeing that happen?
Well, you know, I Kirby Holcutt is one of the most calm guys in the league that I've been around. And you could see his reaction if you went out and looked it up. He wasn't a happy camper. I it's frustrating. If you get a good coach and you invest in that coach, whether it's, you know, financially from a salary perspective or from a facility perspective, which they did at Texas Tech, and then for him to go to an in conference school, it hurts. I mean, you're kind of, you know, I think you're hurt personally because you build a relationship, and then you're hurt professionally because, you know, you hope you can go out and get a coach, you know, that's just as good. And so I think that's kind of where you have to go. It's like, okay, you don't want to be here, fine. We'll go hire somebody else and we'll kick your butt. But, you know, it's not something you want to have happen, and hopefully, you know, you don't see that happen very often.
Gene, appreciate the time as always. Thanks for making time for us, and enjoy some baseball this weekend. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, take care. Thanks. Appreciate it.
There's Gene Taylor, K-State Athletic Director, here on the game. I thought fascinating bit of info dropped there about Chris Klieman splitting up the recruiting class into, hey, we'll have 15 spots for high school kids. We'll have 10 spots to play the transfer portal game. Because that's even, I mean, this year it was, I guess it's six now that they have Cade Warner from Nebraska. Maybe it shouldn't surprise me that, hey, it's become such a big thing, you would have four or five more spots tacked onto that, but that seemed like a high number, and it tells you just how much these coaches are focusing on it now. And I think that, I mean, if you're talking about, I don't know, what's 10 out of 25? That's like percentage-wise.
40%.
There you go. I took pre-calc once. 40% of your recruiting class, like, that's a high number, and it becomes now a very important skill to be able to play the portal. And coaches will absolutely lose jobs, get fired because they can't adapt and play that portal game. That, to me, was very, very interesting. All right, Mitchell, I have a number one song of the day for us next. Not the voice that I expected to come on after hearing this beat. She sounds very sexy.
I think she is. Here's the chorus. It's what you've been waiting for. Do you know it?
Sure don't.
From 1990, Black Velvet by Alanna Miles, 2 weeks, and number one.
One-hit wonder? Like, I've never heard of this person before.
Yes, you're right. One-hit wonder. She's a singer-songwriter from Toronto, Ontario, Canada. She was named the 61st best female rock vocalist of all time by Ranker. Now, yes, six studio albums. She is a one-hit wonder. With this song. And it landed at number 78 on the best one-hit wonders of the 80s. I said it's from 90. It went number one in 90, but it was released in 89 as a single.
This is another one, though, where still, I'm amazed this was a number one song. This does not seem catchy and hooky enough to be a number one song.
Well, if you think about the time, who was big? You think of Janet Jackson at the time was pretty big. That kind of music, that kind of sound, that pop sound.
So you're saying, when I came out of the womb on August 26, 1989, this could have been the song that was playing in the background?
Maybe. Paula Abdul was big at that time. Madonna, like, that, yeah, you're right. I mean, when you think of a female vocalist, you're not thinking of this, like, country/rock sound. You know what I mean? It's kind of has a bluesy sound to it as
very
well.
Very gritty. Very gritty.
Yeah, I agree. So this is her self-titled debut album, sold 6 million copies around the world. If you had to take a guess, what do you think the song is about?
Well, someone wearing some black velvet. I mean, it's
what
gotta be.
What or whom, I should say.
Now I wish I would have been paying more attention. The guys wear black velvet? I don't. Is this about another, like, some guy
so
that's standing in the corner of the room wearing black velvet?
I don't think you'd ever.
Pool.
You would think. But no, this song is about Elvis Presley.
What?
It's kind of a tip of the cap to Elvis Presley, his career. So
wow.
Black.
Okay.
So I'm gonna give you some lyrics from the song. So black velvet and a little boy's smile. So I guess back in the day you could buy these black velvet Elvis paintings anywhere, and then early female fans were drawn to his little boy's smile. Up in Memphis, the music's like a heat wave. That is a reference to Sun Studios. The epicenter of early rock where Elvis recorded his music. Another quote here, "Love Me Tender leaves him crying in the aisle." "Love Me Tender" was a huge Elvis song in 1956. There's another one here. "The way he moved, it was a sin. So sweet and true." Well, the legendary hip swivel of Elvis Presley, the Elvis pelvis.
The Elvis pelvis, I like that. And give me some Elvis pelvis on tonight, boys.
I'm going to give you another one here. And the last quote I have from the song. "Every word of every song that he sang was for you. In a flash, he was gone. It happened so soon. What could you do?" That is a reference to Elvis suddenly dying in 1977.
On the toilet? Is there a toilet reference in there?
There was no toilet reference.
I am shocked. I would never have guessed in a million years that was about Elvis.
So there's more to this because, Alanna Miles, she signed her contract when she was 28 years old. Totally screwed over by the record company. She said in an interview she never actually received a positive payment for this song until April 1st of 2008. She signed the record deal. She said when she was young and naive, she ended up paying $7 million on expenditures from the first three albums she signed or she released due to the records deal she had. All deducted out of her take was this money. And then Miles said that when she should have been dining out because of a successful song, a number one hit, and putting out other recordings, instead she had been living in poverty for a lot of the 90s, and at times struggling to pay her rent, even though she had a number one song.
That was crazy.
All because she didn't have a lawyer to read through all the fine print, have somebody that knows all that jargon to be able to tell her, hey, this is a bad deal. Do not get into this. But no, the record company took major advantage of her. Now, Miles.
Well, Real Big Fish told me the record company ain't going to give me lots of money and everything's going to be all right.
Not for Alanna Miles. Canadians are just too nice. They like, hey, wow, this looks good to me. I'll sign it. She did win a 1991 Grammy for Best Female Rock Vocal Performance and the 1990 Juno Award for Single of the Year.
Well, what's her name again?
Alanna Miles.
Alanna. Can we start like a free Alanna hashtag or something?
Well, she's free now. She got out of that deal. It's been done and over with for quite some time. She's making money now, but...
But I feel like she needs, like, some, you know, some back payments here.
You're right. Yeah, you feel like she's due. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm just looking for...
But the thing is, she couldn't find it. I mean, fight it. She signed the contract.
Like some restitution here. Some restitution. Let's get Alanna some restitution. That's all I want. I know lawyers. Let's figure it out. Let's make this happen.
I mean,
civil suit.
I think she's got plenty. She's got great talent, but the thing, I mean, it wasn't like she was wrongly convicted of a crime here. I mean, unfortunately, she just made a bad mistake.
I'm here for you, Alanna. Let's do this. Ask Us Anything's next. That's some even written down. There is some prep that went into this segment.
Oh.
What hobby do you wish you had more time for?
Man.
I'm not even going to go. It's not fair to call this a hobby because I haven't done it in a long time. But what I always say and think when I hear something like this and what I want to do is I want to learn guitar again. I took guitar lessons in high school for like a year or so, and like got to the point where I could at least like play things. My lesson would be I would take, you know, whatever Blink 182 song I was listening to that week into this guy. It was really interesting. He'd like been a roadie for Rush or something.
Whoa.
And he would just like tab it out for me and then teach it to me. And so I learned how to play a lot of stuff. And then I broke my leg and I was like in the hospital and I just kind of like lost it, didn't pick it back up. And I've always regretted it. I still have an electric guitar, but I need somebody to teach me lessons is what I'm saying. So slide in the DMs at JL Kurtz on Twitter. If you can play guitar well, I need somebody to give me guitar lessons. I do very much want to do that.
I have a group of friends that live across the country from Pratt, Kansas, Colorado, Texas, Michigan. The way we keep in contact is we play video games together. We'll, you know, play Call of Duty or different games where we can like team up together and we just shoot the breeze and play video games together. Well, I've hardly had time to do that for quite a while. So I would really love to get back to that and keep in contact with my friends and get back to those good old days. But also that, and I haven't really been able to listen to a lot of new music lately. I'm pretty backed up on a lot of rock that I haven't been able to listen to in a while, so that'd be nice to get back to. Also, instrument-wise, I want to learn how to play the piano. I think I've said that before.
You know, that's another thing. I took probably 3 or 4 years of piano lessons as a kid. Maybe it wasn't quite. It was a lot. My parents had me playing piano for a long time, and at the time, like as a kid, this is just like last week when I was talking about I didn't appreciate my vacations to Colorado every year growing up because I was a kid in Johnson County and I'm like, all these people are going to Florida and Mexico and like, why can't we do that? Now I'm like, damn it, I should have absolutely embraced that more. Same thing with piano. I was like, oh, I don't want to play piano. Why would I do that? This is boring. I hate it. And now I'm like, how cool would it be if I could play the piano? How cool would it be if I could remember how to play anything? I don't even know that I could give you chopsticks these days. So, yeah, piano maybe too. We can add that one to the list. I'll start my own rock band this summer. Learn some piano and guitar. If you could get away with doing something illegal without getting in trouble, what would it be?
It feels like a loaded question. I would say rob a bank.
Well, that has to be it, right? Like that. I'm glad you said it because that's the obvious answer here. You're getting away with it. So, like, you have to just go take money from somebody. You're dumb if you don't choose that. There's your get-rich-free ticket. Just go rob a bank. You won't get caught, and then you'll have the dough.
But not like some local branch. I want to go rob some, like, national bank, or like the Bank of the World, if that exists.
Like Bank of America HQ or something? But you would need to, I will say this, the thing you would need to do is make sure that, like, the place you're going, like, they actually have money on hand and a bunch of money on hand. You know, if you go to like their corporate headquarters or something, maybe there's not an actual like vault there. You need to do some vetting here. But the answer, that's like, you know, you get one wish, you ask for more wishes, you gotta rob a bank here.